The following show is dedicated to Mia Park and Barbara Yang. The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Okay, thank you for being with us this morning. I'm your host, Rick Thompson, and you're listening to Talk Saratoga on WSPN 91.1 FM, Skidmore Radio. And we have a special guest this morning, John Winnick, who is the Retail Supervisor of Dining Services here at Skidmore College. And John's been on, I think this is our fourth year in a row, to do a Thanksgiving show, and it's always fun, and we always learn something new that we can use in our preparations. So good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Oh, hey. Yeah, thanks for coming in. There was quite a night last night. When I got home, I didn't realize what time it was because I said to my wife, well, I'll be back. It's an hour show, so I'll be back. No. But it was great.
It was a good one.
Yep, Skidmania. And we got Thanksgiving coming up already, John, which I can't believe. It's this coming Thursday already, and Sunday or Saturday after Thanksgiving will be December 1st already, so we're rolling into seasons. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that you've always talked about is planning ahead and reserving your turkey. So why don't we touch on that first?
Sure. One of the things about Thanksgiving I learned, now that I kind of host for the last several years, is that it's very important to have a game plan and kind of dole out assignments, so to speak, and share the load if you don't want to take on the burden of cooking every side dish and the turkey as well. And that's one thing my family does really well. My wife's side of the family loves to cook. They love to create and do different ideas. Different dishes, but Thanksgiving is all about tradition, in my opinion, so we try to keep it traditional, but put our spin on it. We've done several things over the years, and this year we're going the more traditional route, but everyone has a job, and we're pretty much ready to go.
Yeah, we talked about that before the show, how you always had a theme, and this year it's tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we've done different themes over the years. We did like a Creole Southern style, and that was all the dishes came from that region. We've done other ones, but this year we kind of stepped back, and we really couldn't come up with another theme that made a lot of sense. And I kind of said to everybody, it's Thanksgiving. Let's keep it traditional because that's what it's all about, in my opinion. And everyone decided they were going to make their favorite dish. And I said, that's good because it's a potluck, but we need to know what everyone's having so we can kind of, you know, have the grocery list and kind of game plan for ingredients and start shopping, you know, sooner than later. And that's what we did. And we have a really nice menu this year. It's traditional, but everyone did their favorite. So now it's personal, the recipe. So we have a really, like I said, a really nice menu. It's the original plan was to make your favorite, but not say what you were bringing.
Oh dear!
And I said, I can't do that. I'm a trained professional chef, and that's not how we roll.
That's not how you like. Yeah, really. So I was going
to
say
we needed to have some, you know, assemblements to this, and everyone agreed. Yeah, because we didn't want like three sides of, you know, yams and two sides of
stuffing,
and then that's it. So we have a nice, I think there's nine of us, and we have about 10 or 11 side dishes because I'm making a side dish plus the turkey. So and we even got a couple desserts thrown in there too because we have a couple bakers in the family.
That's neat. You know, I Canada's Thanksgiving is October the 10th, and I always wondered how they chose that date and how we chose our date. for to celebrate Thanksgiving, you know, because I don't know if there's an official Thanksgiving Day dinner that the Pilgrims celebrated, but then I don't know what Canada celebrates. I mean, I know the, I don't think the Pilgrims landed in Montreal, but it's a pretty nice time of the year. The only thing I don't like about it is it gets lost in between Halloween and Christmas as far as the retail push goes, because that seems to drive everything.
They're literally a month apart most of the time, and I think a lot of it has to do with the harvest. You know, in the Northeast especially, the harvest season is in September and October. So November, you kind of take everything that you picked and set aside and harvested, and you celebrate it. But and that could be done in October as well, but I don't know. It's, I guess it's too far away from the holiday season.
Correct. I guess. So the first step in the dinner, really, I think any dinner is the bulk, which is the meat. And so what's the important thing about your turkey?
With the turkeys, you know, every year I get calls or emails from either friends or family that know, because I'm in the industry and I've cooked for many years. What do I do? This is a big 16 to 20 pound piece of meat with bone. It's frozen solid, and it's Wednesday, and I haven't even pulled it out of the freezer yet. Well, that's why you got a game plan, and you got to do a little research. But I mean, in today's technology, you can find all this information online. But for those out there who want to hear it firsthand, I get the turkey at least 2 to 3 weeks ahead of time, so I make sure I have one that's the right size. It's in my freezer, and I can pull it when I'm ready to pull it for the thaw. I don't have to worry about going to the store and going to several stores and looking around. And I'm, every year, I don't go hunting for a specific bird. It's more or less, you know, the Butterballs or the brands that you see in Hannaford and Price Chopper. Those are
Shady Brook.
Those are great birds. It's a turkey. So it's what you do to the turkey is how it's going to taste. They all have the same diet. You know, they live the same life. So it's a matter of your seasoning and how you prepare it. And, you know, I've done it a lot of ways. I've fried it, which is fantastic. It's a lot less work, although you do have to set up the fryer and there's safety precautions. But I fried it 1 year out in the snow with an umbrella.
Really?
Yeah. And it was snowing on Thanksgiving, which it's been doing. It seems to be a theme recently.
Yeah, I know.
We get snow on Thanksgiving, which is hard to swallow.
Yeah,
it is. I was out there, and it was gently snowing over the fryer. I'm outside in the yard with an umbrella.
Jeez.
But it was only a half an hour. It wasn't a four-hour cooking experience. Literally, it's a half hour before you want to eat it. You can cook it and then rest it and slice it.
Well, you know how I do mine is they have those oven bags.
Yeah,
and I put it in there, and it cuts the time back, and it keeps it moist.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about snow on Thanksgiving. When I was going out with my wife, we would come up here for Thanksgiving dinner and have Christmas down at my parents' down where I grew up. And we'd stay overnight the night before because she didn't have school on that Wednesday. And we got up Thanksgiving morning, and there was about a foot and a half of snow. And my in-laws always had two friends over for dinner that were alone, and he had this honking old Cadillac. He was the only car on the road that could make it. So, you know, but you talk about snow on Thanksgiving, and But now, do you get, obviously, you get a frozen turkey.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. What's the difference between a frozen turkey and a fresh turkey as far as taste? Is there any difference?
For me, not at all.
Okay.
No, I think sometimes it's just personal preference, and you don't have to, maybe you know a local farmer who's growing them and has them, and it's kind of a nice thing to say, oh, I got a fresh turkey, and, you know. Well, for me, it's not any difference, and you're going to pay more for the fresh turkey.
Oh, yeah.
I think this year I paid 79 cents a pound.
That's what I did.
I bought it at Aldi's.
Okay.
Which is kind of like, it's my store recently. I go there quite often.
Yeah, I got 78 cents a pound at Walmart, and it was a 10 to 16 pound turkey. So, I mean, you know, that's not bad, because I think a fresh turkey's like probably $4, $5, $6, $7 a pound. And if there's no big difference, I don't know why, other than thawing it out.
Yeah, and people do make the mistake of not pulling it in time, and then you're in trouble because unless you want to throw it in the bathtub, which I've heard people do,
really
throw it in the bathtub because it's a cooler, you know, an igloo cooler, and put some cool water over it. But even then, you're going to take a day and a half to get it.
Oh my God! Yeah, so you won't be eating.
You cannot cook it frozen. People don't do that.
Hey, you know, I heard the other day some crazy guy that I work with deep fried a turkey one time while it was frozen. Oh. Yeah. And I guess it wasn't a good experience.
No. Oil and water
do not mix. Yeah. So you got to be careful if you're doing that. You ever have a turducken?
I have not. I know what it is.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go through that. I don't think that's the way to eat those meats.
I don't either. No.
It seems wrong to me.
The thought about it,
Stuffing another animal. No, thank you.
No, not at all.
But as far as the turkey goes, you know, once you get it and it's frozen, and the general rule of thumb when you're thawing it is you thaw it out in the refrigerator or an igloo cooler in the garage or the back porch, wherever, like, it can be safe. And you want to make sure you give it enough time. For every 4 pounds, you plan for a full day. So I have a 16-pound bird.
Mm-hmm.
Thanksgiving's on Thursday. So that means by Sunday, I'll pull it.
Okay.
Maybe even Saturday or Sunday, and it'll be fine.
So you'll do it today or tomorrow for Thursday.
Yeah, and it's in the cooler. It's all by itself. As it thaws, it's going to, you know, release some of those juices, but it's in a bag.
Right.
And then you just open it up over the sink and you wash it. You got to wash your burger, too, because a lot of people don't do that. There's those juices in there. It's blood and it's water and ice, and you want to make sure you rinse that all off inside and out, and you pat it dry.
Okay.
And that way your turkey, and a lot of people will move the giblets out and the neck and set those aside, because you can roast those and make your giblet gravy if you want to do that.
Oh, all right. Frying pan.
Yeah, you just cook them or roast them in the oven, and then you take the meat off and put it into your gravy so that there's some substance in it. I'm not a fan of that.
No.
Some people will do it and put it in a blender so it's less chunky.
Yeah, my grandmother used to do...
It does add a lot of flavor.
Yeah, my grandmother used to do that, but put it in the stuffing.
Yeah, sure.
You know. It's not the neck, but the other parts.
Yeah, sure. But anyway, you would definitely want to get it ready that way. And then once you're ready to cook it, then it's all about the seasoning, which is something that I think, you know, a little bit more than salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of, I take the skin that you can loosen by running your, you put on a glove, a safety glove. Food safety glove, and you put it up underneath. I mean, if you're squeamish, you put on a glove. If not, you're going to
use
your hands.
Yeah, and wash
and
it.
And you kind of put the tip of your fingers between the breast skin and the skin, and you make a little kind of like incision with your hands. It's going to separate naturally if you give it a little shove. And then you take some softened butter and you smear it all up under the skin. And then as it roasts, that is just going to go through the turkey. Mm. And it tenderizes it, adds flavor. And then you would want to season that area, too. Salt, pepper, your spices that you would use. Even if you use a poultry spice blend, which is fine. I like to use fresh sage, thyme, garlic, and onion powder. And a little salt and pepper. Very simple. But you got to have some seasoning, because the turkey needs a lot of help.
Oh, yeah, it does.
It's a lean meat.
Yeah, it is. It's a lean meat, and it's... Yeah, it doesn't taste like chicken, but anyway, when you do your stuffing, do you do it inside the turkey? That seems to have fallen out of favor a lot.
I'm glad you said stuffing, because stuffing is only called stuffing when it's in the bird.
Oh, really?
That's the difference between dressing and stuffing.
Okay.
Believe it or not. We might have discussed this before, but a dressing is typically done up here in the Northeast, and that's... a dressing, it's in a casserole dish,
right?
It's bread cubes or whatever you want to throw in, and then all your seasonings, and some people put sausage in it or apples and whatever, and then it's baked. It's a dressing, and it's funny it's called a dressing because you're just dressing the table
with it. I know.
But it's still, I mean, we call it stuffing growing up, but in the South they stuff the bird. It's more traditional to stuff the bird.
Oh, down South.
But then it became a safety thing in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
People were concerned that, can you eat it? It was in a raw bird. Well, it's all cooked. And if you cook your bird to the 165 temperature and the stuffing inside is 165, you're totally safe.
Yeah. Well, it's like when I make tomato sauce. You cook it for hours, but I throw my pork chops and my meatballs mm-hmm. and sausage in raw.
Yeah.
And then I just cook it in there because it gets juicy and falls yeah. apart. So I would think the same way with the stuffing.
Absolutely.
And when I was growing up and my grandmother, you know, we used to have a big Italian family and we'd all meet over there every Sunday. But for Thanksgiving, she'd always make stuffing and it was really good. But today it just doesn't seem to be that much. And like you said, the 80s and 90s, I think, withheld a lot of that stuff, you know.
Yeah, and I think stuffing is one of those lost side dishes that people give, they can give or take it. I actually love it, and I like it when there's a lot of freshness in it.
Yeah.
Not just opening up the pack and adding chicken stock, because that's just bread and moisture.
Right.
But I like texture. I like the, we call it in the industry, a mirepoix, which is diced carrots, onions, and celery. That those three ingredients, they're aromatic.
Yeah.
They add crunch and flavor, and they give it some look.
They make a difference.
Well.
It really
yeah.
does.
Just simple saute in a little butter first, and add that to your breading mixture, and it goes a long way. And then you can really get creative, you know.
Yeah.
So I was watching something, of course, everything you watch on TV now, even the news, has tips for Thanksgiving. And, and this one lady said she did a AI question for her phone. And she went to her cupboard and asked AI, this is what's in my cupboard. What can I use for Thanksgiving? And
you're
they
kidding.
Identified. Yeah. And I thought, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Especially for those that are not creative and don't want to go through a cookbook for ideas. You can
sure.
you can ask
your phone.
AI, your phone. This is what's in my cupboard. You list the 12 or 15 ingredients, and it sorts them, and it gives you an idea. The big thing that came out that I remembered was she had dried fruits, and, you know, wasn't going to use them anytime soon. Maybe she bought them for something, and they were in there, and they said, add them to your stuffing. It'll
I'll
add color
darned.
And texture and sweetness.
I'll yeah. be darned. That's
cool.
interesting, yeah. Because I've got some dried apricots at home. Maybe I'll chop them up and put them in mine.
Yeah.
Because my daughter's a vegetarian, so I make hers with vegetable broth mm-hmm. and celery and onions.
Yeah.
And then I put sausage in mine and ours. My wife doesn't really eat that much of it, but maybe I'll cut that up too and try it.
You know, I'm glad you said vegetarian, because people with special diets, they feel lost and kind of out of place sometimes when they go to a Thanksgiving meal, because it's like all about the turkey and,
yeah.
and the heavy sides. But most sides are vegetarian, and they're delicious. And when you build your plate and you have a wonderful display, I mean, there's hardly any room for the turkey.
I know. No, my daughter's really, very, yeah. yeah, I mean, she's full.
Yeah, and we definitely take that into consideration when my niece comes, as she does every year. And now that she's a full-grown adult, we want to make sure she's happy.
Yeah.
You know, as far
and
as
feels
the meal.
Welcome
yeah, exactly.
for dinner. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I had a guy I worked with whose daughter was a vegetarian, and we got talking. I said how I make two different, stuffing, dressings. And he said, why? And I said, well, my daughter's vegetarian, and I use chicken broth in mine, and I use vegetable. He goes, he said, they don't know the difference. I use chicken broth in mine. I said, you know what? That's not, I can't do that,
yeah.
you know. But, no, you want to make them feel well. And like you said, there's enough food on a Thanksgiving table that most of it is vegetarian, and they have a great Thanksgiving meal, too. So, all right, so that's great. 4 or 5 days before Thanksgiving, don't forget to take it out. Otherwise, you're going to have it a week later. So, whatever. All right, so now you got your turkey, and you don't want your company bringing a dish that you have no clue what they're bringing, so you don't have four things of the same. So how do you go about when you have 9 or 10 people like you're going to have over, how do you go about planning it so that you coordinate everything?
Yeah, that's a good point. You don't want to be fighting for the oven and the stovetop. And some kitchens are small, some kitchens are bigger, but, you know, it seems like the smaller the kitchen, the more hands seem to want to be in that kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to game plan. And when I say that, you have to look at the menu, jot it down, make a list, put the time it needs to be prepared, the time it needs to be in the oven, and maybe even the time that it needs to rest. Like the turkey, you got to give it a half an hour after it comes out. You don't serve it immediately.
Okay.
It's not going to go cold. When mine comes out, and like Rick said, if you're using the bag, keep it in the bag until you're ready to carve it. If you're not using the bag, you just keep it covered with foil. And because it's so big, it's going to take a long time to cool down. So you can even go, mine last year sat for over 45 minutes on the stovetop, tented with foil. And it was fine. It was piping hot when I carved it.
Okay.
So you don't have to be in a rush, but you definitely have to use that. And I'm looking at our game plan, and we stick it right on the fridge, and we put the item, the time it's being prepared, the oven temperatures needed, and then the time it needs to cook, and the service time. And, you know, this year we're planning to eat around 5 o'clock. Turkey goes in at noon. It's coming out at 4. So that's the critical time, is that hour, you know, from 4 to 5 is getting those items in the oven. And luckily, we have a double-decker oven, so we have space.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which is nice. But so maybe you have to prepare certain things the day ahead, so you're just reheating. So you're not cooking the entire dish for an hour.
Okay.
Whereas you could reheat it for 20 minutes to half an hour, which is what, you know, I think we're going to do with the stuffing and the green bean casserole. We even have a corn dish that probably should be prepared in the morning or the day ahead, and it can be reheated. You know, and that way you're not like, oh, it hasn't set. It hasn't set yet. How many times have you heard that? So you're waiting on, you know, the green bean casserole, which...
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I know.
It's got 20 more minutes, and you've had the turkey out for an hour already.
You know, just off of this a little bit, should you, when you cook meat, whether it's any kind of a roast or that, should you let it set after you take
100%.
It out?
Yeah. That goes even if you're cooking a single New York strip steak.
Okay.
You cook it on the grill, you don't serve it right away. The minute you go to slice it, all those juices are going to come flowing out and all over your plate. You got to give it time to let that connective tissue that's in there and the juices settle.
Okay.
You know, it's been cooking, it's been under stress, believe it or not, and you need to, like, let it decompress relax. It's something that a lot of people don't do. And, you know, you go slice anything on that cutting board, the first thing that comes out, it's all your juice.
All there's the good all juices.
Your, yeah, yeah, and you've just lost it. Now your meat's going to be dry when you go to slice it. You just lost everything on the plate.
All
it needs to stay in the meat. Yeah.
Another thing, should you put meat in when you cook it at room temperature? Should you take it out of the refrigerator and let it set?
Let it get to room temperature.
Okay.
That's a good point. When I was in the restaurant industry and you're cooking steaks and pork chops and even a piece of chicken or even a piece of fish, we would set it on a little plate and we'd season it, you know, salt, pepper, a little oil before it went into a hot surface, whether it was an oven or in a hot skillet. And it just lets the meat, like, get to temperature, the right temperature. You know,
okay.
You're not shocking it.
Yeah.
Because then it tightens up and gets tough.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's good. So, I mean,
even the turkey.
Right.
You know, I'm going to have that thing out and season it. It can sit on the counter for a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to go in the oven and get fully cooked.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Great.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, but are you having your foreign student over for Thanksgiving?
We are not this year.
Okay.
They all had alternate plans.
Oh, all right.
In the past, we've definitely had some students over the house from Skidmore.
Yeah, that's fun to have them see how you celebrate.
Yeah, because, you know, they don't celebrate this holiday in their country.
No.
So it's a tradition you get to share.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of special.
You're right. You're right. All right. So there's different ways to cook a turkey. Well, we talked about assigning different, we'll keep on that subject for a little while, assigning different tasks.
Yeah.
And you always say, I know you said in the past that even if somebody doesn't cook, you try and assign them dish that's easy to give them the sense that, you know, I mean, they are taking part in cooking the dinner.
Yeah. So I think we've talked about this before, but you assign certain things. So and one year we actually, and I'm just reading my notes here, it reminds me, one year we took all the tedious tasks and we put them in a hat. And if you picked that task, that was your job. P peel potatoes. Okay. It's, you know, it's a task. You're not cooking, but you're helping.
Yeah.
And to me, every chef has cooks under him, and you need those cooks to do the prep. You know, otherwise you're doing everything. And if you're in the kitchen and you're peeling potatoes, you're part of the whole process. But peeling the potatoes, snipping the beans if you're using fresh beans, helping prep any of those items, putting a salad together. It's not hard. You put it all on the counter and say, here you go, and put this together. It may involve a little chopping and dicing. And you're technically not cooking at the stove, but you're in the kitchen assisting. You're part of the process. You're
part of that dinner.
I know that sometimes even helping bake, you know, someone is the lead and maybe the other person is gathering the ingredients and helping mix, you know, but getting everyone involved. And that's only if they want to. Don't force them.
Right. But, you know, the thing, too, is if you try and do everything yourself, the more you try to do yourself, the more problems you could have. Oh, my gosh, this is overboiling.
Then you're left holding the bag, doing everything, and you're missing out on the actual reason why it's Thanksgiving. Everyone's gathered together to celebrate and, you know, be together, and you're out in the kitchen slaving away, and everyone's watching football in the next room.
That's right.
Or the parade.
No, I'm bouncing around a lot, but okay. How important is it to, like, my wife always a week or two before, maybe a week and a half before, an event, a holiday dinner, makes a list of what we're going to have, and then a grocery list of what we need, rather than just on the spur say, all right, you're going to the store this weekend, pick up such and such. It's important to make a list ahead of time, isn't it?
Yeah, you make a list, you take an inventory of what you have so you're not overbuying, and that's one of the things people do for Thanksgiving is they tend to overspend. Without even meaning to, because they think they got to have this, they got to have that, when really you can take a good hard look at what's in your cabinets and your refrigerator or even your freezer and use those items that maybe you kind of don't think about too often.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe you went strawberry picking back in July and you froze some. Well, now's the time to pull them out and maybe make a strawberry dessert instead of buying a pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
You know? And do something creative with what you have in the freezer. But yeah, we make a list every year. Like I said, we divide it up, but then we still make a master list. And since we're the hosts, we let people know what we have. So maybe they don't go out and buy, you know, pecans.
Yeah.
Maybe we have them.
Right.
You know? Or, you know, my son loves to do charcuterie. Well, we might have something that he can use on that charcuterie board. Or part of a recipe, you know, just your basic pantry items, flour, sugar, you know, if someone's baking, maybe you can at least have that so they don't have to go out and buy it. So, yeah, we make a list and we go out and we shop around. I enjoy shopping as being a cook for many years. I feel that you have to get in touch with the ingredients from the resource, you know, the store or the farm, wherever you're going, because you get your hands on it. You see it.
Sure.
Instead of someone just bringing it home in a bag and saying, here you go.
Right.
You know,
do what you want with it.
Yeah. But a list is very important, I feel. And that way you're not forgetting things and making multiple trips to the store.
Yeah. Remember one year you made for our Kiwanis Club, you made a chutney, was it?
Oh, yeah.
I remember you.
Orange cranberry
chutney. There's really a lot of different things you can do that are creative that you may not think about doing. And that, I think a holiday is a good thing to try out, but because that was good. That was fun watching you make that, and it ended up being good. All right, so, you know, you got your dinner done. You got your all your products that you're going to use for your dinner. I always peel my potatoes, my white potatoes and sweet potatoes the night before and keep them in water in the refrigerator. Just it's one less thing I have to do. Like you said, we don't have a large kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so I get a lot of that stuff. I make the dressing the night before, the two, you know.
I must say, I'll be busier on Wednesday than I will be on Thursday.
Yeah.
Just so my Thursday's more casual and I can enjoy everyone's company.
Okay.
Wednesday, you know, you got all day Wednesday to get things done.
Exactly.
As long as you're not working, and I'm lucky enough to not be working this year.
Yeah.
So I'll be, you know, toiling away in the kitchen, but at my own pace and, you know, I can do it in the evening or in the morning.
When, right.
You know, as we do have some people coming over on Wednesday, but this year we're going to try and get out and see my mother who's in Amsterdam. So we want to, that's part of the day too. So,
yeah.
You know, because Thanksgiving really is all about family and including everybody. And, you know, this year my mother won't be with us at the house. She's in a nursing home. So we're going to go like have a little preliminary Thanksgiving with her. So that's part of the day. So
yeah,
you know,
that's good.
There's a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it in.
Right. But it's good to spread it out the day before rather than Thanksgiving day. You don't want to be bouncing around all over the place. Yeah. All right. So cleaning the turkey is important. As you said, make sure you wash it inside and out. And whatever you do with this package inside, whether you use it or you just throw it away. I know people cook it and feed it to their
dogs
or the cats, you know, whatever. So so you do all that. You've brined a turkey before.
Yes.
Correct?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of important. Once, like I said before, turkeys need a lot of help. Lean meats need a lot of help. And a brine is the simple way to do it. And a brine really is a mixture of salt and water, and that can be as simple as you want it to be, and it does the job. And when you make a brine, you take the 8 parts of water and the 1 part of salt, you boil it on the stove. It literally takes 10 minutes, 15 tops, you turn it off, you cool it down, and then when it's cool enough, you pour it over the meat, and you submerge it for a certain amount of time based on the weight of
the
meat, of the turkey in this case. So I brine it, and people notice the difference. I mean, you will see a much more tender product. The flavor's there. This year, I'm putting apple cider as our liquid.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be sweet and have the apple flavor. You can sneak in cloves and cinnamon and things of that nature, bay leaf, peppercorn, and you throw that in there, and it just becomes a, it's almost like you're making your own special tea.
Yeah.
Salty tea.
Right.
And then you pour that over. Whatever flavors you put in that, it's going to impart into the bird. And turkey takes on a lot of different flavors because it's so bland on its own. But anyway, it just, to me, it's an extra step, but it's really, if you do it once, you don't want to not do it. Because a turkey doesn't come tender.
Okay. You're right. So really, you do that every year?
I do.
You do?
Yeah. Even if you're going to fry it.
Okay.
You do it. It just lends itself to a way more tender bird. It's juicy, tender, and it's just the reaction that the salt has. It draws out a lot of the, you know, flavors.
Puts a lot,
yeah.
Now, do you do that the morning of or the day before?
No. So to brine it, you want to definitely, like I said, it's eight cups of water to 1 cup of salt for about a 14 to 16 pound bird. That'll give you enough volume of liquid to pour over it. And of course you need the space, a big pot or a cooler. I do mine in a cooler in the garage and just cover it with a lid.
Oh, all right.
You know, I mean, this time of year, the garage is just like a refrigerator.
Yeah.
If you don't have enough space in the fridge, which a lot of people don't.
No.
And so anyway, I take the brine and put it in there for at least 12 to 24 hours.
Oh, okay.
So it's not, you know, multiple days. Multiple days would be bad because you're going to have a very brined bird.
And right.
It's going to be too salty and you can't take that away. So after 12 to 24 hours, and you can do 24, it's not going to hurt it. You pull it out and then you give it a rinse in the sink and you pat it dry like you do before. Because everything that's been done is inside the bird at this point.
Okay.
So anything outside is just too much salt, residuals.
Right. So you want to wash that off.
You wash that off.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just think you can even add sugar to the brine.
Oh, really?
Some natural brown sugar, or 1 year I put a little maple syrup in there. It's just, you can really get creative with it. And but that's the basic ratio is 8 to 1. So if you remember that, it won't be too salty.
Okay.
But it has to have enough in it.
All right.
You know.
Now that's interesting. I should talk my wife into trying that.
And getting to the timeline of this, you're going to cook it on Thursday, so you brine it on Wednesday.
Okay.
You take it out Thursday morning. Do the rinse, and then you can season your bird appropriately, and then you're only handling it one time.
I know you had talked about, you know, when you season, you like to rub the butter under the skin of the breast and that, and then rub the seasoning all over the outside of the bird. When you... Should you slow cook your bird? your turkey. I know most people do like 325. Rather than,
I do like to do the quick half hour, 30 minute of high heat.
Okay.
You can blast that oven. You can bring it up to 425, 450, and a convection oven works even better, but it's not necessary. You just want to get the color going on the bird, and what it does, it sears the outside like you would in a pan if you're searing a piece of meat.
Yeah.
You sear it to lock in those juices.
Okay.
Then you turn it down, and that's why in a pan they'll baste it with butter and turn the heat almost off, and you just let that hot butter cook the steak. Well, now you do the same thing with an oven. You put a good caramelization on the turkey. You want it to get golden brown. That first half an hour at 425, that turkey is going to get golden brown, especially if you've rubbed seasoning and butter on the outside. Then you cover it with foil, and then you turn it down. And now you do the low and slow method of, you know, for a 16-pound bird, it's going to be about 3 hours.
All right.
Maybe 3.5, depending on your oven temperature and the size of the bird. But, yeah, that's what you do.
Well, I know I used to go to the Methodist Church. I didn't attend it, but they used to have a dinner every November, roast beef dinner. Mm-hmm. And it was the best roast beef you ever had. But what they used to do is they put it in an oven at like 500 degrees for not very long. Mm-hmm. But and then they turn the temperature down. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if they left the oven on. I think they used to turn it off and then let it cook. And it was rare enough and just really neat. Mm-hmm. So that must have been what they do, is they sear it to keep the juices. And
I mean, most places when they do prime rib dinners, that's what you do. You They have these machines called Alto Shams, and they're like a low, slow cooker, like even below 300, even 275, which is, you know, not hot at all.
No.
When it comes to oven temperature. But you sear the meat first.
Okay.
At, like you said, 500 degrees, and you get it caramelized, and then you just low and slow. And that's the best way to eat meats when they're, some meats lend itself to that type of cooking, low and slow. Let those juices go, and
that makes
it takes
it tender.
A long time for those connective tissues in there to break down.
Okay.
Because if they don't break down, like a pot roast takes forever.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you're just eating rubber.
Yeah,
and
really.
Shoe leather. Yeah, you got to break it down.
Okay. Yeah. That's, you know, that's good. And we let the bird rest after cooking. Mm-hmm. And while it's resting, you can get everything else ready. Things are different now than when I was growing up, and probably when you were growing up too, is that more things were homemade for dinners, even big dinners. I mean, even the gravy. You didn't go out and get packaged gravy. You
right.
used
or
to
a jar.
Make, right, or a jar. You used to make the gravy in the pan and add a little flour to thicken it up, and it had all those juices and everything in it.
Yeah.
Today, people, I mean, I am in that way. I use McCormick turkey gravy. And you open a package, it's a cup of water, you stir it up, you know, if you want to make two or three packages.
Right.
But what can people do to that? Not that it's not tasty, but what can people do to that to make it a little more homemade-ish?
Yeah. Well, the key with that is fresh herbs. Anytime you can add freshness to a convenient product, it takes on the homemade look, appearance, and flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving herbs are sage and thyme.
Right.
Not rosemary, because rosemary is just too much.
Okay.
It tastes like a Christmas tree after that.
Yeah, that was Simon and Garfunkel too.
Yeah.
But
thyme, freshly picked thyme, it's super cheap in the store. A lot of times the produce sections will have a little packet.
Yeah, a little
bag. And it will have sage, thyme, maybe a little rosemary, parsley. You know, the song. and even fresh parsley. It's very floral, aromatic.
Mm-hmm.
And you chop that up and you throw it in at the very... And here's a key cooking term, not only for Thanksgiving. When using fresh herbs, you throw them in at the very end.
Oh, really?
Because they'll dissipate. They'll turn to nothing. If you put them in an hour before you serve, they're
right.
done. There's... The flavor goes away. if you use dry, you put them in at the beginning part because they last.
Right.
You know, they're fortified, they're dried, so they're intense. Whereas a fresh herb is only intense for a little bit.
Okay.
That's why you always see people garnish with it at the end. And
put it on.
But yeah, you know, getting back to convenience, there's a lot of good convenience products out there now, and it just makes things go fast for the people that don't cook or don't like to cook, but they want to put on a spread. But I'm a big fan of the homemade gravy. You know, people don't always know what to do to make a gravy. I mean, it's so simple. You have your liquid, and you have to thicken it. Okay. And the only thing that's going to thicken it really is flour.
Right.
But you don't just throw flour in the pan because then you got to cook that out.
Right.
You know, and you can get lumpy gravy. So what if it's lumpy? What do? You can blend it in the blender, which is another step when you're dirtying something else.
Right.
Or you can put it through like a fine sieve, you know, a strainer. But if you make a roux, and I don't know if people know what a roux is.
Probably not.
But a roux is equal parts of butter and flour or fat and flour. You can use Crisco or drippings, you know, the drippings from any kind of product that has fat. You can take that fat and say you got 2 tablespoons of fat, so you put 2 tablespoons of flour. You mix that in like in a little bowl or right in the pan. Then you add your liquid to that, and you bring it up to a boil. You simmer it for 5 to 10 minutes until you taste it, and you don't taste the flour anymore, and you're good. And it thickens it. And it all depends on how much roux to how much liquid. So, you know, a general rule of thumb is if you have a couple of cups of liquid, you don't need much more than that.
Right.
Then you would do like 2 tablespoons of roux.
Okay.
Okay. If you do more than that, it's going to be very like paste.
Okay. Like pasty, yeah.
Gluey, you know, and it's hard to cook the roux out of that little bit of liquid.
All right.
Yeah.
So the liquid can be like the stock, juices of the...
Or the juices from the pan.
Or like... what am I, broth?
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Can be broth.
Yeah, you can take that canned broth or that packaged boxed broth and thicken that up, and you got gravy.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. I mean, you get really creative and saute some vegetables first, like that onion, carrot, celery I told you about.
Yeah,
and then strain it out. But you don't really need to do that because those ingredients have already been added to most of those products.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean,
a good gravy makes Thanksgiving.
Oh my gosh, it does.
A bad one can ruin it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking back. My grandmother was a great cook, and she didn't even need a recipe. But she, her gravy and her stuffing was so out of this world that I can never, you know. But I just think back to how great that was. Mm. And gravies today, just unless you really want to spend a little time to make it better, you know, they just can't do it. But you can get the packets of gravy in any store. I would suggest the store that John mentioned where he got his turkey, and the store that I mentioned where I got mine, they have them at a really good price. If you go to the chains, they're probably a little bit twice as much for the same brand, but so you can get some, and they're flavored good, but make your roux and it'll be a little bit better. Veggies, there's a lot of vegetables from harvest that are out this time of the year that last a long time. You can even get them over the winter.
Root vegetables, they're your friend this time of year.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know what to do with a root vegetable. They don't know how to cook a beet or a big acorn squash or a butternut squash. They look like these huge pieces of produce in a store, and they're pretty, and they're not just decorative.
Right, that's what people
they're actually
think.
Delicious.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't need a lot of seasoning because they're really good on their own. A little salt and pepper and butter goes a long way, or olive oil. But butternut squash. You know, it's not in our menu this year, but it has been in the past. Whether you mash them or, you know, whip them up so they're fluffy, or you roast them into cubes so they're tender. And, you know, the big thing is you just got to get through the hard exterior.
Yeah.
Roasted. But a lot of times you can just cut those things in half, scoop out the seeds, and roast them whole, and then scoop it out.
Right.
And then you're not peeling these thick, you know, butternut squash layers or an acorn, you don't peel it anyway. You roast that whole. And I think my wife was going to, we did a prior Thanksgiving already this year.
Warm up.
We did. We had family from Oklahoma visit, and they're not coming out for the holidays, so they came last month, and we did a turkey dinner, and we, you know, we did what we're doing now, but it was an entirely different menu, and my brother-in-law and his wife, my sister-in-law, they took the lead on most of it, and we all just chipped in a little bit, and it was probably the least amount of cooking I ever did for a Thanksgiving meal in my life, but my wife made the, she made a stuffed acorn squash that was delicious. And she had never done such a thing. She just looked, found a recipe in a magazine and said, I'm making this. And
I'll be done.
And it had, so she roasted it, and then she made a mixture to put inside, and it had goat cheese and cranberries, like not dry ones. They were fresh ones. And
right.
They were stewed down, and it was just a nice, complete little side dish that was all on its own. It was pretty on the table. And it had, you know, it had the bright orange color and the white and the purple, and it really... kind of
makes
stood out.
Yeah.
And everyone commented on it. And, you know, a lot of times people are like, ah, it's squash. Ah, it's goat cheese. Oh, my God. It was killer.
Now, the acorn, is that the round one?
Yeah, that's the round,
what
funny
we used
one.
To do was cut it in half when the kids were small. Cut it in half and put brown sugar.
Oh, sure.
In the little hole there, mm-hmm. after you scoop out. And that made it a little different.
Oh, yeah. Cinnamon, brown sugar, butter.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yep. Brussels sprouts. I love Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, I do too.
And my daughter used to get the fresh ones, mm-hmm. and roast them, and I love them. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. She hasn't done it in a year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she's going to do it anymore. Maybe they were hard to find one year. I don't know. But I think they're an overlooked vegetable too.
Yeah, you know, you say overlooked, but man, I got to tell you, every restaurant seems to have them now as a side dish.
Really?
Yeah, because you know what they're doing to them? They'll get them, and a lot of times you can buy them from, like, your food supplier,
mm-hmm.
and they'll either be trimmed and halved or trimmed and sliced even, like, super thin.
Okay.
And they come in, like, these big bags, and so you can quickly cook them in a fry pan, or you can, listen to this, you just drop them in the fryer.
Really?
Or an air fryer. And they get crispy within minutes, and they don't take an hour in the oven, and they get golden brown caramelization. You hit them with salt and pepper when they come out, or you sprinkle balsamic glaze on them, like a lot of people do, or a pomegranate molasses.
Yeah, my daughter did
that. My Lord. I mean, that
really,
yeah, or bake, chop up bacon and sizzle them in the bacon and with a little bacon grease.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, do you do anything like that up at the spa? For vegetable or no?
Not in the spa. Unfortunately, the demographic we serve every day wouldn't appreciate it.
Yeah, that's
yeah. They want their smash burgers and their crispy chicken sandwiches.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
But in the dining hall, they do things like that because they serve a much broader audience.
Right.
And they do specialty preparations and things, and they have a lot more chefs in the kitchen over there.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a great dining hall too, and the spa's fantastic. But yeah, I always wondered about Brussels sprouts because people just kind of like boil them and then add butter.
When you were a kid, they were awful because no one knew how to cook them.
Right.
You know, now they're just, they're a delicacy. Yeah.
So they'll triple in price pretty soon.
I hope not.
No. Now, what can you do with apples and the side dishes?
Well, you know, apples lend themselves to... quite a few different things. They're going to add sweetness. They're going to add texture to a dish. You can throw them in a stuffing and do a fruit-based stuffing, or you can do even a sausage and apple stuffing, so you get the savory side and the sweet side. You know, apple pie.
Yeah.
Remember, we live in New York State, and apples are, you know, abundant.
Yeah.
So the harvest of apples are around, and, you know, sometimes they can even go in a salad, you know? They add nice crunch and texture and color to a salad. There's something to be said for a nice, like, harvest fall salad. A restaurant I used to work at up in Glens Falls, I helped my friend out. We had an autumn salad, and it had roasted butternut squash. Hearty greens like kale and arugula. And then he would put, like, either a goat cheese or, like, a softened white cheese, like goat or feta. And we'd have the sliced apples in there and maybe some roasted red onions. And not only was it a beautiful salad, but it was... very tasty.
Yeah.
And then you can put maybe like a candied walnut in with it, or almonds, and it puts itself, you know, that whole
nice
nut
yeah.
fruit thing that a lot of people tend to like.
Well, my wife's favorite salad is, once in a while we'll get those Price Chopper mm-hmm. made up, but I forget what the heck it's called, but it's got strawberry in it, mm-hmm. blueberry, walnuts. Mm. And I mean, that's one of her favorite salads. Yeah. I may even have a cut up apple in there and a Granny Smith.
We have one
Smith,
at the spa that we do on occasion called the red, white, and blue salad.
Yeah.
Strawberries, blueberries, goat cheese.
Oh, no kidding.
Walnuts. People love it.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, because I mean, even your clientele there, the kids, they're a health kick.
Yeah. They're not all smash burgers.
No, they're not.
Chicken and french fries. We do try to have a variety for them.
That's right. Probably especially the girls. They like to watch what they eat, and the guys will woof down anything. One of the things that after the dinner is desserts. Mm-hmm. And I know you always had one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about the dinner.
Sure.
Oysters.
Oh, yeah.
Now, do you have them whole or do you cut them up into...
Well, that depends. See, my brother-in-law lives in Cape.
Okay.
So he will go to his favorite seaside shanty,
right,
where he will go and buy fresh oysters, or he will buy the shucked ones that come in the brine.
Okay.
I think it just depends on price and availability and what they have when he goes, but he tends to do both.
Okay.
We do get the fresh, and I've helped him shuck them, and then he prepares. But if you're doing a casserole, I wouldn't use fresh. Fresh oysters primarily are for, like, if you're just going to
eat them on the half shell
and enjoy them right then and there. But if you're putting, like, he makes this casserole, it's going to be hot anyway. So you can buy those, they call them those selects, and they're already shucked, and they come in a brine, and they can be fresh in a brine. They can even be not frozen, but they're prepackaged.
Okay.
You know, so they're pasteurized, so they're shelf-stable almost.
Mm-hmm.
But they stay plump and juicy, and then you cook them. The idea is when you're making this oyster pie or oyster casserole that he likes to make, is you just got to make sure there's enough moisture and not too much dry, because then it's just dry.
Okay.
Yeah. And we've had good ones and bad ones over the years. It's kind of one we always keep trying.
Right.
It's a kind of an homage to my father-in-law. He loved oysters. And Brian just happens to live on the Cape, so he would always have them.
Yeah, I've never had it, but everybody always, well, not everybody, but I know, like, some of the stores, the grocery stores will have a bucket. And people will go in and say, I want a quarter pound or half pound of oysters, and they take it. And I always wondered what it tasted like.
Yeah, they taste just like the stuff off the shell. They really do.
Yeah.
And they're very good.
Okay.
In the restaurant industry over the years, we've done many appetizer-style dishes with warm applications.
Oh, all right.
You know, like an oyster skillet or a little casserole that you put, like, flavored breadcrumbs on, and you pop it under the broiler, and... You know, the simpler the better with oysters. You don't want to overwhelm them.
Well, the kids that I was hanging around with up here, of course, they're from foreign countries, and they just like to cut the oyster shells open and then suck out whatever's inside. And I don't know. I mean, I love raw clams, but oysters seem a little bit too big for me. But anyway, so let's talk a little bit about desserts. You know, get creative with that.
Yeah, so we're very lucky in my family that you know, we all have our sweet tooth, and we like to play around in the baking and doing different recipes, but you still want to keep in tradition. And because we're doing favorites this year, I know that my brother-in-law is making a pecan pie.
Okay.
And that's my favorite, so I'm glad it's his as well.
Yeah, I make one every year.
My sister-in-law is making pumpkin pie. You know, those are two solid Thanksgiving
staples,
pies.
Yeah.
Staples, but, you know, they're going to be homemade. You know, whether you're going to buy a pre-made crust or make your own crust, it's still the same ingredients. It's, you know, it's shortening her butter and flour and water, and that's about it. So I'm okay with buying a pre-done crust. It's a lot less work.
Yeah.
It's what goes inside.
Yeah. I use the Pilberry ones.
Yeah, they're fine.
They're fine.
But I know my younger son likes to bake, and he likes to do everything from scratch.
Right.
He's making dinner rolls, which are awesome. You know, they're better than the packaged ones you can get by far.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Yeah. I can imagine.
He's even going to put a little bit of a crust on them, whether it's like an everything bagel topping.
Okay.
So it's like got some texture.
Sure.
And then he's going to do something with fresh berries this year. I don't know if he's making a tart or whatever, but we're definitely going to have some different desserts this year to nosh on.
Yeah. I always make, and this is on Wednesday, I make a pumpkin pie, pecan pie, and an apple pie. It's a pecan, or an apple pie with pecans on the top with
like
brown sugar.
Yeah,
you do that. But, I mean, I always figure those are the three staple pies that you can...
You can't go wrong.
No, you can't go wrong. You got something down here, Good Vibes.
Good Vibes.
What the heck is Good Vibes? I mean, I know it's a Beach Boys song.
So everybody has a job and a role in Thanksgiving. And my niece, who does cook, she's got to work right up until the 19th hour.
Uh-oh.
So her and her mother are going to be coming to the house
right
maybe an hour or two before dinner. Right. So there's not a lot of time to create and get in the kitchen. So she said, I'll bring Good Vibes this year. And I'm like, well, okay, we're writing that down.
Oh, all right.
You better bring good vibes.
So that's on the menu list, Good Vibes. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
We have a couple minutes left before Homer comes in. How do you make good rolls? What's your son's secret for making good
rolls? Well, first of all, you got to give yourself time because they have to proof twice. So you make the dough. And then you have the dough in the bowl, and then it has to proof or rise. That's rising in a warm environment.
Okay.
You cover it with a towel. You put it up near the oven or on top of the refrigerator where the warm air of the house is in about an hour, and it has to double. Then you punch it down, and then you shape out your rolls, and you got to let them rise again.
Okay.
And that allows the yeast to do its job and rise and make them fluffy, and then you bake them. So then when you cook them, when you bake them, they get the exterior brown, golden brown deliciousness on the outside.
Sure.
Inside is pillowy and light and fluffy.
Now, does he do this before the day before or that day?
He'll do it that day. He'll come over on Thursday and he'll be baking. He'll be doing that while the parade's on.
Early
in
the morning. Yeah.
And then don't forget the dog show because that's tradition too.
Oh, yeah. You know,
we do that. We have two dogs, so we root for the dogs.
You do. You do.
We kind of throw a dollar in and you pick one of the breeds to win. We're gamblers too, so.
Yeah, I know. Well, hey, America's pastime.
Exactly.
You know? Well, hey, listen, John, I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah.
This is always a highlight of the year for me, doing this show. And I wish we had time to do one at Christmas, but it's always fun to do.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Yeah.
Hope you got something out of it.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Right.
We do every year. Always
get
something out of it. All right. Well, thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.